This program was first broadcast on Canterbury's access media station, Plains FM, and was made with the assistance of New Zealand On Air.
Hello and welcome to 3-Pre-1-Cast. This podcast is your pit stop for a comedic but educational take on the crazy and illustrious world of Formula One.
We will take you through the latest news and happenings, while also offering our views and perspectives on the key moments, both on and off the track. So, to quote the great David Croft of Sky Sports F1,
it's lights out and away we go.
Hello everyone and welcome to 3-Pre-1-Cast. It's Stephen here. I'm here with Rory today.
G'day, how's it going?
It's been going good, but I am a little bit sad because the Formula One season is now over.
The Formula One season is well and truly wrapped up for 2022, and we had a bit of an interesting race towards the end. What did you think of Abu Dhabi? Did you watch it live?
Well, I did watch it live. I was initially going to not stay up because it was at 2 a.m. our time, but I wasn't working the next day, and I thought, it's one last hurrah.
Yeah.
So decided to stay up and got about halfway through and just fell asleep because it was 3 o'clock in the morning and it wasn't that exciting of a race. Like, it wasn't like last week in Brazil where you were, you know, there were things happening throughout the field and an unexpected result was coming. You know, Max took a pretty comfortable win, and there wasn't really much on the line. You know, Max had won the championship, Red Bull had won the teams.
And I think as soon as Lewis had tapped out of the race as well, it was like, well, there's the end to the Ferrari-Mercedes debate.
Yeah, there wasn't a great fight between them either, really. And while some people were interested in the Checo versus Leclerc for P2, you know, it was ultimately a very symbolic thing. You know, it wasn't going to matter who won that race, you know, it was only really it doesn't afford you anything greater.
Yeah.
In the championship. So, if you didn't hear the outcome of that battle, obviously Leclerc beat Perez. For once, Ferrari pulled off a good strategy.
They did. I know. They must have been stoked with that.
Yeah. I guess a good way to end a season that had a few strategic blunders. Good to end on a high for them. So Leclerc finished second behind Verstappen, which guaranteed him second in the World Championship as well, with Perez finishing third. So that's kind of the key result from the Drivers' Championship. I guess we should give you a quick update on how the Constructors' Championship finished. So Red Bull, obviously, were on top. Mercedes, they didn't dethrone Ferrari from P2.
It came close. I mean, it was a good wee resurgence towards at the end of the season, but
well, when you consider that they finished, were they first and second in Brazil? It was a 1-2 in Brazil.
It was a 1-2, yeah.
Yeah, so 1-2 in Brazil. I mean, that was the strongest result that they could have put in to try and put them in the best position in Abu Dhabi. But I think in Abu Dhabi, it was Ferrari clearly ahead.
Yeah.
Further down, Alpine won out in the battle for fourth. That was looking quite tense until Brazil, when McLaren actually went into the race in the strong position, and Alpine was starting down the grid on Sunday in Brazil, but as it turned out, then Alpine actually flipped that race on its head a wee bit and got ahead, and eventually they got, I think they had a 19-point lead after Brazil, which pretty much sealed the that fourth place for them. And then further down in sixth place, Alfa Romeo beat out Aston Martin. They actually, I didn't realise this.
They haven't beaten, they're equal on points.
Well, they're equal on points, but it will be, Alfa Romeo will be ahead because they would have finished up. They would have got a higher position in a race.
Oh, I see.
So it essentially goes on who had the most first place, who had the most second. Well, they didn't have any of those.
They rank the highest positions.
Yeah. So I wonder, that must have been, I reckon, a Valtteri Bottas drive to about fifth. He would have got a P5, whereas Aston Martin's highest was a sixth place.
Was it sixth?
I think they got sixth in Azerbaijan.
Okay.
I remember Vettel had quite a good race there.
Oh, yeah.
But had Vettel, this was the thing, that was kind of the last exciting championship battle in Abu Dhabi.
Yeah,
Vettel could finish one place higher, he would have moved Aston Martin up, but unfortunately couldn't be done.
It was still a great... I mean, obviously there was a fair bit of narrative at this race. I mean, there typically is at the end of a season. Seb's last race, I'm glad he just made it the whole way through to the end.
Yeah, like, it would have been tragic to be taken out on lap one.
You know, that was the one thing I was kind of hoping for, is that he wasn't just going to get swiped out by a stray Latifi wheel or something.
Yeah.
You know, that would have been horrible.
Or even just a mechanical failure. Yeah, like, that would have just been so sad.
Yeah, but no, the fact he went through to the end was really, really cool to see. And he scored a point, which is really nice.
Yeah, it was also the final race... potentially forever, but we don't know, for Daniel Ricciardo. He drops off the grid next year, so a bit of a farewell for him. Also Mick Schumacher, who's now lost his seat for 2023, so that's some news that broke just before the Abu Dhabi Grand Prix, that he's been replaced by Nico Hülkenberg for 2023.
Yeah.
So, at the moment, Mick Schumacher is out of a drive. There was some talk or some... Schumacher fans, including Josh, who couldn't be here with us tonight, I think was hoping that Schumacher might sneak in at Williams, but Williams have actually hired a Formula 2 driver who, in Abu Dhabi, did you hear about this storyline?
Yes.
He had to finish over above sixth in the championship to have enough
A super license.
Yep. He needed the points to get a super license. He got it. So that's Logan Sargeant.
Logan Sargeant, that's it.
He will be driving for Williams next year now. It won't be Schumacher.
No.
So Schumacher's off the grid for 2023, and his future is a little bit uncertain.
I don't know. I think, and I said this to you guys once this news broke, but I could really see him potentially doing a sort of a Nyck de Vries-esque, you know, way into and back into the sport. You know, he did outline that he was very determined to come back and that he's got a position in the sport. As of now, I don't think he's an attractive enough option for any team to pick. I think there's talent out there that could be bigger and better and is worth taking a punt on more than somebody who's got 2 years experience and never really broke through and showed too much promise. I think with a last name like he's got, I think, and you know, and his talent, he'll take it to potentially Formula E or maybe Indy, and hopefully make a bit of a name for himself and make a return one day.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what he does. And I think funnily enough, Alex Albon is probably an example of a driver who proves that in the sport you can turn your name around. I mean, Alex has gone from being cast out at Red Bull. Personally, I didn't think much of him once he was cast out at Red Bull. I thought he's done his dash. He isn't going to cut the mustard, cut him loose and move on. He's come back into Williams, and I would put him among one of my top drivers this year. And I mean...
he's been good, hasn't he?
I would want him on my team.
Yeah.
He's been really good.
Yeah.
I think it's just a confidence thing, and I wonder if it's a similar situation with Mick. Give him a year on the sidelines, bring him back somewhere, and maybe he'll do better.
Well, I guess that's a different perspective, actually. Like, maybe this 2 years' experience will actually be seen as more of an asset. I mean, sure, like, you've got young drivers who are getting picked up, like Logan Sargeant. You've got these young guys as well, like Liam Lawson, who inevitably kind of on the cusp of, we could take a punt on him, we could not. If Mick then sort of goes back into that pool with those other guys, yes, we've seen him not necessarily break through in a huge way into the sport, but that 2 years of experience means he could come in and hit the ground running if he's got the right setup, if he's got the right car. So, yeah, who knows? He could do an Albon.
Yeah, potentially. You got to wonder, though, I guess, where he would go in the future. I mean,
it would potentially be Alfa Romeo.
Yeah, well, Alfa was the one I was thinking of if maybe Bottas left. But Bottas is on quite a long contract.
Yeah.
It's, but then would you bring him in for Joe? Yeah. I don't know. It's a tough one, but it's a scenario, I guess, the point that I'm maybe getting at is that he will need a few things to work in his favour, you know, in the way that same way with Nyck de Vries, who returns with AlphaTauri next year. I mean, I think that wouldn't have happened if he didn't have that one race in Italy where he could race and showed his talent, proved to everyone what he's worth. And if that hadn't fallen into place, I don't think he'd be at AlphaTauri next year.
I guess, and then if you look at the other end of the spectrum, you've got Danny Ric, who's... He's obviously been sent a contract by Red Bull. Is that confirmed?
So it's a bit of an awkward situation and Christian Horner played on this awkwardness, where the team have not confirmed it. Ricciardo has not confirmed it. But Helmut Marko, who is the Red Bull advisor, who's kind of like, he's almost like the grandfather of Red Bull in a way.
Yeah.
And he basically just said to Sky, with one of the TV channels, he's like, yep, we've signed him on. It's all done. It's he's going to be our reserve driver. And then, yeah, Christian said in the press conference, yes, we've sent him the contract or something. He hasn't actually signed it yet, but he's intending to. We're all on the same page. Helmut's just jumped the gun
a wee bit. In his excitement.
So essentially Daniel Ricciardo next year will be the reserve. Well, actually, there was some contention on this where I don't think he's the reserve driver. He's actually technically, from the report I saw, he's the development driver.
Oh, so he'll be on the simulator and that's it.
That's more of a, yeah, the reserve driver is technically Liam Lawson, who's the young gun, who's actually a Kiwi, by the way. Did very, very well in free practice one in Abu Dhabi, driving the Red Bull, Max Verstappen's Red Bull.
Yeah.
Was very impressive. But then again, the reserve driver sort of can mean nothing, because when Mercedes needed a reserve in 2020, they called up George Russell and not their reserve driver. So
yeah.
Who knows if that's a big deal or
who
not.
Who was the Mercedes backup driver or reserve driver?
I have a feeling it was Nick De Vries. At that point, I should search it up and find out. But I remember distinctly George Russell was not the reserve. They had a reserve driver.
But because he was in that sort of academy program, they just...
Had a contract on Russell. Yeah. It was a perfect chance to test him out, see what he's worth. And and the Williams, it was the Williams reserve driver who drove the... So it wasn't even the Mercedes reserve who drove the Williams.
They didn't even trade. They just literally brought him up.
Literally. So, that's a role for Daniel Ricciardo. But again, it's a similar thing. Will he get back on the grid 2024? Where would he slot in?
I have a theory.
It's a tough one.
I have a theory, and I understand this is very unlikely to happen, but we're probably not a million miles away from potentially Max and Checo's relationship going so far down south that it gets to a point where there's just no cohesion. Red Bull start getting challenged more by a Ferrari or Mercedes, realize they're missing this cohesion. Checo's a bit older. Maybe the results aren't going his way. They ditch him, and Danny Ric swoops in, and he becomes the number two driver.
You are predicting that Daniel Ricciardo re-partners with Max Verstappen after an already testy, sort of fiery relationship between them.
Yes.
That is a very, very bold prediction.
But Ricciardo would take it, wouldn't he?
Well, I don't know. Would he? Would he, though?
Of course he would. If he didn't fancy a top drive, he wouldn't be sticking around in the sport next year.
Honestly, it would actually be probably the saddest circle of events if Daniel Ricciardo left Red Bull to go and find these new horizons, ultimately shoots himself in the foot, basically, because he doesn't live up to expectations. That he was average. Well, I don't know. His time at Renault was okay. But didn't get to championship winning level. Goes to McLaren, has an absolute disaster. And then to rescue his career, he goes back to the exact spot that he was trying to avoid in the first place.
I mean, it's an L. Like, I think going back to Red Bull, it makes sense, right? Like, there was nowhere else for him to go. He probably somewhat wanted to remain in the sport, so he's in touching distance of getting another drive. Red Bull shouted him. He's got a good relationship with Horner and probably others in the team. He's probably gone, this is a little, like, year out for me. In his world, I don't know if it's going to be that easy for him to get back in.
Yeah, I think it would be a long shot. Though certainly your theory on Perez and Verstappen falling out, wonder if it could happen.
Because I think they were very quick to, like, you know, jump on the PR side and smooth over. No. They've got a great relationship. They've always worked well together, and they will continue to.
Yeah, that Brazil incident, crazy, though. Yeah, just the fact that Max would not let Checo through in that
incident. Do you want to explain in detail how that unfolded
For those of you who didn't see, in Brazil, essentially the situation was Verstappen was on a faster strategy, had better tyres after a safety car, got past Perez but couldn't get further ahead with the race coming to an end. So Red Bull said, look, Max, you've won the championship. Perez is still fighting for second and he's behind Leclerc at the moment. He needs all the points he can get. Let Perez through on the last lap. And Max refused. And he said on the team radio, he said, look, I've got my reasons. I've told you I'm not doing it.
Mystic messaging, wasn't
it? He didn't do it, yeah. Now, Max has not said outright has not confirmed definitively what his reasons were for letting Sergio Perez, for not letting Sergio Perez pass. And essentially, it's important, I think, to note, Max had nothing to gain here. Like, wasn't going to lose anything. Wasn't it for him, it meant nothing. For Perez, it was a crucial championship fight. But then again, it doesn't really mean anything as well. It's just a good statistic on paper. But anyway, as it then emerged after the race, the allegation, and I want to stress ridiculously that this is only an allegation and has not been proven in any way, just an allegation. It emerged that apparently Max is unhappy because Sergio Perez deliberately crashed in Monaco during qualifying. And again, that's the allegation, is deliberately, which is a serious allegation in my opinion. I wish it was getting further investigated, but it doesn't seem to be.
Well, you can't really, because it's intention, it's, right? Like, how do you investigate somebody's intention?
That's the thing. It is tough. Yeah, but essentially, the reason why Perez would have crashed deliberately is because at that point in qualifying, it was Q3, Perez was on provisional pole, so he essentially had pole position, and this was the final laps. And so if he had decided to spin the car and crashed, then everyone else would have to stop their laps. They wouldn't have time to set another one that guarantees pole position for Sergio Perez. So you can see why it could have possibly happened. But again, it's so hard to prove.
And you can't. And that's kind of why they've not persisted with it. Now, where did that come up? Like, where was the source that leaked that could have been? So where did this come
from? There's been reports in the Dutch media about it, and there's also it's one of those things that once one person mentions it, it just spreads like wildfire on social media. And Max, actually, very interesting, Max hit out at the media in Abu Dhabi and about the social media furor, and because it did get pretty messy with what some people were saying about him, and some people just take it way too far, and he was pretty angry, and I think somewhat rightfully so. But the only sort of contradiction was Max was going, oh, the media's getting it wrong, and you've got to present the facts in the right way. And then they go, well, tell us what the facts are. What's the true story? And he goes, no, I'm keeping that between the team and myself, so not like for the public.
You can't have the facts, get the facts right.
Sort of his sort of criticism was, if you don't have the full facts, you shouldn't write the story.
That's not quite how it works.
But,
right?
The other interesting thing of note is Martin Brundle, very respected commentator, he did mention it live on tele. He didn't say explicitly, but he mentioned Monaco and the incident that happened in Monaco.
He did, didn't he?
He didn't go as far as saying the allegation that Perez crashed deliberately.
He did wonder if it was something to do with Monaco.
That incident. Yeah. And because Max was very rightfully angry about that incident, because he's trying to get pole position, he's fighting for the championship, and Perez spins the car on the final laps, ruining his lap, his chance to get pole, and it gives pole to Perez. Perez goes on and wins the race. Yeah. I mean,
Oh, man, it is a tricky one, isn't it?
It's very, very tricky.
Yeah. No, I do wonder as well, when Carlos Sainz then had that interview where he then also alluded to potentially the on-purpose crashes happen more often in the sport than what we realise.
Yeah.
I think that was also a little bit of fuel on the fire that maybe did or did not necessarily need to be said. Yeah. But, I mean, it is interesting, isn't it? Like, imagine if this is more of a thing that we just don't know happened.
Well, and that's why I think I would want an investigation into it, because there'd be telemetry, telemetry? Is that the right way to say it?
Is that where you look at
telemetry? Telemetry is what I mean to say. Telemetry data, which, now there has been some I've seen on TikTok about it, but again, I don't know whether someone's just put that telemetry over to try and paint a narrative.
Yeah, so who knows it's about not the bias.
It's not verified, but some people are suggesting that on the telemetry, you can see that Perez basically stamps on the throttle and spins the car, And so that's where it gets difficult, because that makes you go, oh, okay, maybe there is some merit here. But then you think the FIA, surely someone at the FIA could see that And so I don't know how true that is. I get a bit iffy about this sort of thing.
Yeah,
it's, you know, it's hard to...
Even with that, even if the FIA saw that and went, this flag's a warning sign, Checo could quite easily go, I'm human, I made a mistake. You know, and at that point, how do you decipher that?
Like, exactly. Even if he had stamped on the throttle, but, you know, maybe he stamped on the throttle because he's trying to go faster. Yeah. He knows his pole is under threat from Max, who was going very quick at that point. It's like, okay, I need to get out of here quick. And you know, I've done it on video games. I mean, where I've, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you're driving with a bit of anger and you just.
But I don't want to also.
Put a bit too much throttle.
I don't want the sport to get to a point as well where every movement of the driver's being analysed. And if they do anything that is out of the ordinary, that then they get just considered, oh, no, you've done something out of the ordinary. You're going to be penalised for that. It's like, well, they're still humans racing a car at the end of the day.
And, I mean, there's a part of me that really wants it to be looked into as best as possible, but also thinking about it, like, there's always been this allegations of people deliberately crashing or deliberately mucking up. To ruin, like, there was one, there's been, I can think of two in Monaco specifically that have happened in the past, and then there was, there's always been the allegations that Michael Schumacher crashed into people in 94, 96 to win the world championships. Again, stressing allegations only, and again, you know, how can you prove
any
of this stuff?
Yeah, you can't. But it is interesting, isn't it? I think, you know, 3 or 4 months back, if you'd said to me, you know, Max and Checo's relationship goes downhill, you think, crikey, this is going to be a bit of an upset.
They seemed really strong. Yeah, they seemed like a really good working dynamic. But I wonder if Perez now sort of harbours... There was a press conference, I was reading the transcript of a press conference, I think it was in Brazil, might have been in Abu Dhabi, but they were talking to him about sort of next year and how he'd performed this year. And I thought he made a half-decent point, which was there was a period sort of... in the early mid-season where he was doing okay. I think it was sort of around Monaco where he had beaten Max in Monaco and then he beat him to pole the next race in Azerbaijan, I think.
Yeah.
And he sort of made a comment of, you know, if I didn't take so long to get into my work and actually got down, you know, I could cement myself as a real championship contender. And, like, I guess I thought it was interesting that he was speaking very much in that press conference as someone who is thinks he can win the world championship with Red Bull rather than I'm just here to
aid,
support Max and help Max. Which, I mean, there's probably part of that might be just a little bit for show in terms of, you know, you're never going to walk in and go, oh, I'm just happy to finish second. Mm. But it was just, I thought it was such, it struck a tone of I really think I can do this.
Yeah.
And it made me, I thought, well, it would be great if it did.
It would be exciting.
Sergio really took the fight to Max, but I don't know if he's quite got it in him.
It is tough, though, because realistically, if Mercedes and Ferrari don't fix up next year, we are going to have to rely on Checo now being more sort of, you know, he should be really into the swing of things with Red Bull now. So if he's ever going to compete tightly with Max, I think it would have to be next season.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
which would
I think
be exciting.
So. But on that point about Ferrari and Mercedes, I actually think they're going to be closer to Red Bull next year.
I think Red Bull's deficit will
be less, especially with that penalty from the cost cap breach, having less development time and less wind tunnel time. I think that'll help Ferrari and Mercedes get a little bit closer. And we saw Mercedes win a race in Brazil.
One race
for the season.
Unlucky
George Russell.
Sir Lewis not getting this is the first season
ever in Formula One that he's raced in where he has not won a race.
Incredible scenes, and that's
crazy.
And this has come after his 7th world championship, and it's not like he's moved teams.
He's been in the sport since 2007, and every year since 2007 he has won a race except for this year.
The closest
he came to not getting it was 2013, first year with Mercedes, where he only won one race.
Yeah.
But then, 2014, he won the championship. So, straight back into it.
Oh, it is crazy, isn't it? I mean, we just, and we'll do a whole episode. The next episode on 3Pre1Cast will be probably around sort of going over the season and looking at this
stuff. More retrospective.
But, I mean, yeah, look, let's touch on Brazil. Obviously, a 1-2 for Mercedes was probably, the best ending towards the season that they were hoping for. I think all year they were working just to get at least one result like this, where they could both stand up on the podium and go, our car was the best on this day.
Absolutely.
And they achieved that, right? So, I mean, it's props that they took it from, you know, arguably the fourth worst car, potentially even the fifth worst car at times at the start of the season, and was really giving Ferrari a run for their money in the end. And yeah, depending on the track, we sort of knew towards the end if it was going to be a tighter circuit that required more downforce, the Mercs would probably outperform the Ferraris. But on the quicker, longer ones, like in Abu Dhabi, Ferrari kind of took the cake.
Yeah, so Ferrari definitely had it in that last race, which maybe might have dampened Mercedes' high from Brazil. But I think what really helped them in Brazil was actually that it was a sprint weekend.
Yeah.
So, and Max has talked about this with the Red Bull, that you basically have one chance in the first practice session to get your setup right, because then you're into qualifying, and then you get another practice session, but, you know, things are pretty locked from that qualifying. Then you're into the sprint race, then you're into the actual race weekend. So you have a much shorter run-up to the race, and it seems like Red Bull definitely got it wrong, because they were genuinely behind Mercedes. Like, Mercedes didn't win just because Max and Lewis had it coming together pretty early on. They won because they were the quickest car there.
Absolutely.
In Brazil.
I mean, that shows with Lewis still coming second, and he was only 1.5 seconds off George. So,
yeah,
you know, it's not like George coasted it because of that incident.
Yeah, and well, Lewis had the incident with Max early on and dropped. He definitely dropped down the order a little bit, but he came back. I was trying to think, that was definitely on Sunday, wasn't it? Because there was obviously the sprint race on Saturday, which is now my memory's a bit foggy. I'm pretty sure it was on Sunday. Because I remember I put a bet on George Russell to win. I was so sure that it was going to come off for him.
What, for the sprint race or the Grand
Prix? No, for the main race, He was paying like $3 or something. So I put, I put a bit of money, $10 on him. You know, not anything crazy.
What a weekend for George, though. I mean,
incredible.
You just can't write it.
Like, and I wonder, for next year, I think, having already won a race, I think it's a huge sort of weight off his shoulders.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
he can hit the ground running. Like, I think that makes him, it makes, if he's going to be fighting for the championship next year, that's going to make a huge difference. Having already won his first race, he doesn't have to overcome that mental hurdle next year. He's already done it straight into 2023.
Well, even just the experience of winning and seeing through a race, leading and then winning and seeing off the race, like, that experience is going to pay him so many dividends going forward with the next time he's leading a race, how he handles that pressure. Maybe next time he'll be leading a race right from the get-go with a dominant car and set up, and he'll need that composure, and I'm sure he'll rely on it. So, yeah, I mean, it's massive for him. I think next year's going to be really exciting, purely from the fact that I think Sainz was improving as the season went on, and when he didn't have these reliability issues, he was outperforming Leclerc a lot of the time, which was really interesting.
Yeah, there wasn't that gap between Leclerc and Sainz at the end of the season
like there was at the start. So I think the fact that we know Leclerc's class, he'll be in and around. Sainz was improving and probably isn't in with as much of a shout, but just as equally, he somewhat could be. You got Lewis and George and Max, and then if Checo's competitive too. Like, we're looking at six drivers here.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it's so good that, like, out of those top six, like, I'm just thinking about it, there's not really a weak link among them in terms of, you know, like, maybe if you had to choose one, it might be Max and Sergio, with Sergio being quite a bit slower. Not quite a bit slower, but he, you know, is more commonly behind Max. Mm. But
is that because, like, Max is just more commonly easily the fastest man on track?
So good, yeah. Wow, that's the hard thing. But, like, when you think about it, like, Sainz and Leclerc, definitely towards the end of the season, were more like the dynamic that George and Lewis have, for example, where George and Lewis, you couldn't pick week to week who was going to be better.
Yeah,
you know, they were certainly very close in their performance.
Yeah, and I think this is something we'll dig into more in the next episode, but who would have picked at the start of this season, you know, George coming out on top over Lewis.
Incredible result. Yeah, for him.
Like, I think, and you talked a little bit before about the pressure potentially he was feeling before winning this race. I wonder actually if there was even much pressure, because I wonder if because the team had succumbed to just, we've got a terrible car, we've got a lot to do, sorry guys, we've given you a bad tool, do what you can with it.
Yeah.
And progressively the upgrades have come. I just wonder if actually not having as much pressure has actually really benefited George.
I think that's probably right. I think because pretty early on Mercedes knew they were sort of in this no man's land of, we're not quick enough to win the world championship, we're not going to be winning the world championship, but we're also much quicker than the midfield, so we're not going to slip to the back of the standings. So for a lot of the year, they were in this sort of third place, no man's land. They did start taking the fight to Ferrari by the end of the year. But I think for George, the difference would be that if he was winning his first race in 2023 and he was still a championship contender, there's that pressure then. Whereas, yeah, now that he's had this sort of, had this season where the pressure is not as on as much, he's managed to get a race win, it means that that weight is off his shoulders potentially going into 2023, where, you know, who knows, he may be a championship contender. If Mercedes were winning the second to last race, they've said that their performance after the US has been a lot better than they expected when they brought, and in the US they brought an update focused on 2023. I mean, it's plausible that next year George and Lewis could be fighting for the world championship.
I think this year has proven that there isn't as many question marks around George as people maybe think. I think the fact that he's outperformed Lewis, you know, they've had a very even car. Like we said, like often week in, week out, we've not been able to necessarily pick who's going to come out on top, because we know what their level of performance is, and it's so similar. The fact that George is not only hanging on to the coattails, but surpassing Lewis a lot of the time.
And think of the dynamic between Lewis and Valtteri Bottas when they were teammates.
Yeah.
For so long, it was very clear that it was Lewis number one, Valtteri Bottas number two. You couldn't say that about George and Lewis at the moment.
But also, Valtteri was never in doubt that he was number two.
Mm.
You know, there wasn't really much of an opportunity for him to even challenge that pecking order, because Lewis was just so adored by the team. And
Valtteri Bottas just never had the pace, challenged him on track in the way that George Russell
has got the results. Yeah.
Has, you know, finished ahead of Lewis so many times, got to the podium first, before Lewis. It's pretty clear that that he's been fighting with Lewis, whereas it very quickly became apparent that Bottas was, you know, backing Lewis up, you know, behind Lewis.
Yeah. So interesting times with Mercedes, eh? It's going to be very interesting.
Yeah, very interesting. Yeah, whether they can be on it next year.
I know. I'm kind of already can't wait, but there'll be a good Drive to Survive that will come out. We'll all get hyped again, you know, come the start of next year, and it's going to be great. I think we're, like, with this rule change as well, like, I think we've already kind of just taken it for granted, but it has performed some good results, I think, this year, and I think it's only pushing us more to a Formula One where there is just more question marks around who can win it, what teams can, and, yeah, it's going to be great next year.
Yeah. It's interesting you say that, because while the regulation changes, I think, have made the sport better, here's a fact that I saw the other day that kind of blew my mind, but it is true, that the only, or can you think of, I'll ask it in a question instead of stating it, who was the only person that was not from Red Bull, Ferrari or Mercedes who took a podium this year?
Leclerc?
No, say that again. So from Red Bull, Ferrari.
Oh, or Ferrari. Okay.
Not from those teams.
Not from those
teams. So essentially not from the top three. Who is the only person that stood on the podium? Only one person who was a non...
This year.
Red Bull, Ferrari or Mercedes who stood on the podium.
Are we counting sprint races?
Not counting sprint races.
Okay, because that would have been an easy one. Oh, crikey. I've got the list of drivers here. Who stood on the podium?
When and where as
and
well.
Where? Oh. Wasn't Gasly, wasn't Stroll, wasn't Magnussen, wasn't Vettel. Ricciardo didn't get a podium this year. Bottas didn't. Was Ocon's...
I don't know, Rory, was Ocon's... Oh,
Lando Norris didn't... No, did Lando get a podium this year?
Did Lando get a podium?
Oh, you're making this tough. Okay, is it either Ocon or Lando?
It is Ocon or Lando.
Okay. It's Lando.
It is Lando. It's Lando in Imola, all the way back. That's the fourth round,
race.
I think.
Yeah, fourth race
of the year. Lando got a podium the only time. Right. So it's interesting because if you look back on 2021, we're at the very, you know, that's after basically 7 years of, well, I think seven if my math is correct, 7 years of development of one set of regulations. We got to a point where we saw Alpine got a race win in Hungary.
Yep.
We saw McLaren almost win in, they won in Italy.
Yep. Yep.
With Ricciardo. Yep. They almost won in Russia. They took a 1-2 in Russia?
No. Lando slipped right down the field.
In qualifying, they qualified first and second. Well, they got really good qualifying, and then, there was the rain and the decision. Heartbreaking.
That was the saddest day.
Heartbreaking. But if you actually look back, and then, for example, in Azerbaijan, Vettel got a podium. Like, there were so many more random results in 2021.
Mm.
But I think that we always sort of see that when you change to a new regulation, like, it seems like the gap between the front runners and the midfield gets larger.
Yep.
And we've really seen that pronounced this year. So if there's anything that I hope, getting back to the initial point of next year, I think the sport would almost be perfect if that gap just closed a little bit and, we were seeing more McLaren, more McLaren and... Alpine. Alpine. That's the one that was escaping my mind. Podiums and more things like that. It would be epic.
I think, I look at it and I agree with your point. I think the teams are incredibly divided and weirdly divided into sets of two.
Yes.
Except for Williams.
Yeah, Ferrari and Mercedes.
Well, because Ferrari and Mercedes were in an entanglement. Alpine and McLaren were, Aston and Alfa.
Yeah.
And then you kind of weirdly had
we had AlphaTauri and Haas.
And Haas, and then just Williams in eight. So, so Red Bull ran away with it. Williams just didn't. I mean, they did better than last year, but I mean, not by much.
Absolutely.
So it's weird. Like, there are these intense battles, and I think the way the cars are performing on track, we're seeing closer and more interesting and exciting racing. We're seeing, like, the double overtakes, and I think the switchback of positions has been really interesting. I'd love to see those blocks of two sort of get a little bit more crossed and different teams perform at different levels. I'm biased. I love McLaren. I'd love if McLaren and Alpine could actually just start really giving those top few teams a run for the money.
Absolutely. Like, that would be it.
Like, I think, yes, like, I always love a good, underdog fight back down in the early teens for positions. Like, it is sometimes quite exciting. But it would be absolutely phenomenal to see those two teams starting to get in the way of Mercedes, Ferrari and Red Bull. But yeah, we can only keep our fingers crossed. I'm sure that's what they're trying to design things to get to. I think everyone's kind of acknowledged that would be the most exciting way to grow the sport. So we can only really hope.
Absolutely. Right, shall we get on to...
Should we do some segments?
Our segments, yeah.
Absolutely.
Do you want me to start?
I'd love you to start.
You'd love me to start? All right, well, I'm going to do... I'm not fond of the name... So I'm going to do a mouse hole where I take listeners down a...
metaphoric hole.
A metaphoric hole that tells Formula One history. So
exciting and random things that you just didn't know happened.
Exactly. So I thought, especially for someone like you, newer fans, given that Sebastian Vettel has now retired, it may be prudent to look back at his maiden world championship in 2010. Essentially, it came down as well, rather fittingly, to Abu Dhabi. The situation was Vettel was back at Red Bull at this time, and Vettel went to the finale in Abu Dhabi in third place in the championship. He was 15 points behind Fernando Alonso, who's driving for Ferrari at this time and was the championship leader. And in between Alonso and Vettel was Vettel's teammate Mark Webber, who was second, and he was only 8 points behind Alonso heading into the finale. Now, in Abu Dhabi, Vettel qualified on pole, Alonso qualified third. And essentially, I guess, you know, you would say that Alonso was the favourite. He just had to finish fourth, and he's got the championship in the bag no matter what. So, that's not technically true if Mark Webber had won. But essentially, if Vettel won, all Alonso needed to do was finish fourth. And on the first lap, they all got away very well. Vettel was leading from pole. Alonso dropped down to fourth from third. And they got to the hairpin where Max overtook Lewis. They got down to there, and yep. Michael Schumacher spun his car around, and then the Force India of Vitantonio Luizzi crashed into him, triggering a safety car. Now, this is critical because under the safety car, there were a few people who had the softest tyres on who decided, let's go and put the medium tyre on and run to the end. We get a free pit stop under the safety car, so we'll come in now. It'll benefit us in the long race. And crucially, three of the people who did this were Nico Rosberg, who's driving for Williams, and the two Renault drivers, Robert Kubica and Vitaly Petrov. After the safety car restart, the situation is Vettel's still leading. He's got two McLarens behind him, and then Alonso is in fourth, and Webber is in fifth. Now, Webber came in for his pit stop, I think, about eight laps into the race, and Ferrari tried to cover Webber off by pitting their other driver, Felipe Massa, but that didn't work. Massa came out behind Webber. So then Ferrari decided to pit Alonso, and this is where the race ultimately gets sealed, because although he comes out ahead of Webber, Alonso is stuck behind Vitaly Petrov, who is one of the people who pit under that lap one safety car and has the medium tyres on. So although Alonso has fresher tyres, he's now behind someone who isn't going to pit again, so he knows that he has to overtake Petrov. Now, this is back in 2010, so there's no DRS.
And the old-fashioned way.
It's with Bridgestone tyres, which Bridgestone tyres were not quite like these Pirelli tyres that degrade off, and basically if you've got them on, if you put them on later, you're going to overtake someone very quickly. So to sort of cut a long story short, Alonso is stuck behind Petrov, and that's the way it stays for the next 40 laps.
40 laps.
And Sebastian Vettel in that time is able to pit and not get caught. So essentially, the situation is Alonso is behind Petrov. In front of Petrov is his teammate Kubica, and in front of him is Rosberg. And by having those three cars, that's pushed Alonso from fourth down to seventh.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Vettel's leading the race.
He's
out ahead. It's great. And essentially, that's the way it stays for the rest of the race. There was only, after the fourth lap of the race, there were only three more overtakes in the entire race.
That's a snooze fest. We thought it
might have been a bit of a snooze fest. I didn't watch the full race, so I can't speak to that. But essentially, Alonso's seventh, Webber is eighth. That's how the race finishes, and ultimately that's how Vettel wins the championship, because Alonso finishes in seventh, can't get past Petrov, and he loses the championship by 4 points.
Oh.
And if Alonso had finished fourth, he would have won the championship. He would have beat Vettel. And again, I mean, you've got to remember, Vettel's going into this race 15 points down in the championship.
Yeah.
He's third in the championship, and this, when he crosses the line in first and wins the championship, that is the only point in the entire season that he led the championship.
That is incredible. That
and
is incredible.
It made him the youngest world champion ever, a record that still stands to this day.
Was he younger than Max?
He was younger than Max when he won his first world championship, only by I think it's 200 days or something.
Okay, yeah.
And Lewis,
I was going to say, it must have been pretty close.
He beat Lewis by about 100 days when Lewis won his first one in 2008.
Yeah.
But, so Vettel was still the youngest world championship ever. He was 23 when he won.
That would have been, like, as I was listening to that story, I was going, this would have been the most boring end to a championship ever. But then as you were just explaining it and how, like, Vettel hadn't even, like, led, I thought it was just going to be so click, oh, look, he's going to win. But that is incredible. Yeah. You just wouldn't have seen that coming.
So in hindsight, like, a lot of people will tell you it was a strategic blunder from Ferrari.
Yeah.
Because what they were thinking was they pit Alonso because they were thinking they had to cover off Mark Webber.
Yeah.
So that's what they were doing. They were covering off Webber, and that worked. They finished ahead of Webber. The only problem was that Vettel's leading the race, and oh my goodness. It's kind of the accursed in that way because they were fighting with two Red Bulls. They had to pick one to cover. They picked the wrong one in the end. I mean, the alternate strategy would have been that they just continued on their soft tyres and then... Yeah, I'm not 100% sure how that would have worked. Maybe they could have kept getting it. Maybe they could have had so much pace on the soft still that then by the time they pit, they'd be ahead of Petrov. But those three. So essentially, yeah, there were three drivers that chose to go on the medium that ended up pushing Alonso from fourth to seventh, and that cost him the world championship.
Well, Ferrari know a thing or two about strategic blunders, and that's not changed this season.
No, absolutely not.
Alonso's been incredibly unlucky because there was a separate occasion where he missed out on another championship by, 2 points?
Yeah, 2012 was very close, I think, as well. I'm not 100% sure on that one, but I think it was 2012 where he basically had a car that was not champion. It would be like taking this year's Mercedes to a world championship fight. Like, wasn't the quickest car, wasn't the best car, but still fought right till the end. I think I've got that right. I think it was 2012.
Yeah, but he came up short. Yeah, he could easily be a four-time world champion. I just, know that for sure.
Well, yeah, many people would have said going into that race in Abu Dhabi that it was his championship.
Yeah. So. Yeah, crazy. Oh, well, thank you for your mouse hole. Let's exit that realm now. We're going to bring it back down. And we like to see Stephen here as a bit of the Formula One boss around here. I'm sure you've worked out by now if you've listened to a few episodes. He is a bit of a encyclopedia or a sort of even a dictionary at times for Formula One stuff. So
I try my best.
We like to, and when Josh sits next to me, me and him typically like to challenge his knowledge with a few facts or a few interesting things, and we see if he actually knew about this in the sport. So, Stephen, are you ready for your first Beat the Boss?
I am.
Okay.
I can just picture the Who Wants to Be a Millionaire music.
Yeah, I wish. All right. Okay. So, my question to you is, which Formula One driver in all of history holds the record for the shortest time elapsed before picking up a penalty?
Oh, goodness. I have to say I don't know this one.
This is a niche one.
Very niche.
I can give you a hint.
Is it modern era?
I will give you the year and the race.
Give me the year, yeah.
Do you want just the
year and the race? Oh, actually.
Oh, no.
Is it China, Michael Schumacher crashing into the back of one of the... He crashed into the back of a car on the formation or the lap to the grid or something before the race in 2004 in China.
No. Would you like your hint?
Yeah, I would like my hint.
Okay. It was in 2006 at the Turkish Grand Prix.
2006 Turkish Grand Prix.
It happened almost immediately after they exited the garage in just 9 seconds into their F1 career.
Oh, so it would have been speeding in the pit lane. And it would have been, who raced 2006 Turkish Grand Prix? That race, by the way, was won by Felipe Massa. If you
just flex on us just with the knowledge.
Just to show that I do know a few things. but no, I don't know. Oh, is it a Super Aguri team driver?
I don't think so.
Oh, okay.
No.
You couldn't tell me the team?
I can. It was BMW.
Oh, 2006. It wasn't Robert Kubica.
No.
Okay, no, I'm lost.
Okay, it was none other than good old Sebastian Vettel.
Really? Did he drive?
Yeah.
Did he drive in practice in 2006?
I think it was.
It must have been.
So Sebastian Vettel holds the Formula One record for the shortest time elapsed in his Formula One career before picking up a penalty. He was caught speeding in the pit lane in practice in the 2006 Turkish Grand Prix.
Yeah, must have been. So he must have been like an FP1 driver.
Yeah.
For BMW. And I hadn't realised that.
$1,000.
Wow, because I knew that his debut was the US Grand Prix in 2007, but I didn't actually realise that he drove in free practice in 2006. I didn't know that.
Very interesting. Now, the next one is a 50-50.
Okay.
And I wanted to get creative with this one, so I need you to tell me if the statement I'm about to say is true or false. Okay.
Pretty good odds.
Okay. So, the first ever can of Red Bull was sold in the year of Sebastian Vettel's birth. True or false?
True. It just sounds like a good enough fact to be true.
Would you like to lock in true?
True, yes.
You are correct, sir. Well done. What a weird coincidence that is, though.
It is a bit of a weird coincidence, isn't it? Yeah. What year would that be?
1987.
87.
Yeah.
Wow. I think you'll find as well. Do you know Red Bull were a sponsor in F1 before they became a team?
I didn't know that, yeah.
If you search the 1993 or 1994 Sauber, it basically looks like a 1990s Red Bull.
Oh, so it does. That's cool. And they were just the...
They were just a sponsor
at that point.
In the way that, you know, Oracle sponsors Red Bull at the moment.
Yeah, yeah. Fascinating. And then they obviously stuck with them and...
No, because they didn't take over Sauber. They bought in 2005. They bought the Jaguar team. So they bought a different team than Sauber.
Do you know? I really want to see Minardi come back to the sport.
Oh, you're pulling at my heartstrings now.
I love
good
Minardi.
Old Minardi.
Oh.
Great Italian team. They became
give Williams some competition.
Absolutely. They've now become AlphaTauri.
Yeah.
It's now
because was Minardi a brand? It was an automobile brand, wasn't it?
I think it was
a racing brand.
No, it was just it was Giancarlo Minardi's racing team.
Oh, okay, fair enough. Oh, yeah, so it was. Yeah, competing Formula One Championship from 1985 to 2005.
One of the more iconic backmarkers of Formula One, the modern day Williams.
Yeah.
Or the equivalent, what I meant to say is the equivalent of a modern-day Williams.
Well, I mean, the blurb is quite nice about them. Minardi competed in the Formula One World Championship from 1985 until 2005 with little success, nevertheless acquiring a loyal following of fans.
Oh, absolutely. Well, they launched the careers of Mark Webber and Fernando Alonso.
Because I remember the 05 and 04 Formula One PlayStation 2 game. And just like, I just remember, like, there would be like a little history blurb about the team when you used to race with them. And it'd be like, yeah, Mark Webber and co sort of coming from them.
Yeah. And Fernando, I can't think of any others.
Yeah.
Unfortunately. But Fernando Alonso and Mark Webber both definitely raced there.
Mm, absolutely. Oh, well. So I think as we draw to a close eventually, I think we've got one more episode coming up this year where we'll look to go over the season and really delve deep into some of the happenings that really stood out to us, some of our favourite moments. We'll look to have Josh back as well in the studio for that, which will be really good. And I think as well, what we'll look at doing is some predictions as well for next season.
We better write those down so we don't forget them.
Yeah, and I'd love to dig up our predictions from the start of this season. So we'll certainly look at digging into that. But Stephen, thank you for joining me in the studio.
Yeah, and thank you for being here, Rory. It's been great to chat. And
we'll speak to you all in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, with our season review. So yeah, all the best and talk in a couple of weeks.
Cheers, guys.
Thanks for listening to 3Pre1Cast. If you want to catch up on any of our episodes, check us out on Plains FM, Apple Podcast or Spotify.
Come and say hi to us on Instagram and TikTok at 3Pre1Cast.